Welcome to our live stream in the trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. I'm in the outstanding First Star Logistics studios, and we're joined by none other than a draft aficionado, Joe Goodberry, who puts as much time into the draft as anybody does. And Joe, appreciate you carving out time with us today, giving us valuable time on a Saturday. But it's the final day of the draft, and welcome to the show, big fella.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's the fun day of the draft, I think. I think it's where you build a lot of your roster. You know, a lot of talent still available.
No question. I agree. It's you know, fourth round, I think, is still a sweet spot of this draft. I think you're going to get a lot of good football players well into the fifth, you know. And really, Bengals, let's talk real quickly about potential Bengal needs, not needs, or things they'd like to address, because I think they're in pretty good shape from a roster standpoint. But the fourth receiver, you know, is a possibility. And when you look at past successes, TJ Hertzmanzada is first one that comes to mind, seventh round draft pick. Marvin Jones, fifth round draft pick. These guys obviously lived up to, or lived beyond, exceeded, I should say, expectations. What do you think? Do you think that might be, you know, fourth, fifth round might be a target for that fourth wideout candidate?
Yeah, for sure. This draft is top heavy at wide receiver. Right. It kind of thins out a little bit, especially if you're – it depends on what the Bengals are looking for. Do they want the slot guy that can probably do some gadget stuff, be a return man, the Bo Meltons, Kyle Phillips? They probably go in the next round or two. Or do you want – there's maybe like one big outside guy left, Justin Ross out of Clemson, who's had his injury issues, but, you know, had past success early in his career. So it really starts to thin out on the outside. I think you can still find a bunch of, you know, eventual slot or gadget types. And that's probably where I think they lean, because I think they could still use a little bit of speed, use a little bit of guys you can use on, you know, on the screens and things like that. So, yeah, I do think wide receiver will be addressed. I'm still looking at tight end, offensive line. I think now you have to go and back to back to back defense. You got a little bit of freedom here to go on the offensive side.
Right. I agree 100,000%. You know, the tight end position, it's like Hayden Hurst obviously was the 25th pick in the draft when he came out of college. And, you know, they signed him in free agency, and they spent a second round draft pick a few years back on Drew Sample. So they do have some quote draft equity that in those two guys at that position. Before we start getting to participants here, and we appreciate everybody for jumping on board the live stream. As I take a look, we got a lot of people with questions and a lot of things to say, and love that. We love your engagement. We love your enthusiasm. I've seen grades for the Bengals' first three picks. The lowest I've seen is a B, and I've seen A pluses. I've seen A. I've seen B, A minus, B plus. Lowest I've seen is a B. What do you think overall? When your knee-jerk reaction, Joe, and obviously you never know until probably about year three of their career, but at first blush, how do you think the Bengals did in the draft?
Yeah, you can only really grade them. I think it's everyone's process of grading is a little bit different. For me, you know, you grade based on how you had these guys pre-draft, and yeah. You know, did they get maximum value? Did they fill a need? Can you see the fits? You know, what do you think the upside of that guy is? So far, I'm giving him a B, but I don't think that's low. Maybe I'm just a harsher grader. I don't know if there was an opportunity for an A. You know, for me, getting an A would be getting extra picks, or somehow getting a guy that fell maybe a full round or so. A Joseph Asai pick last year is like, that's an A, because you get a guy that I have way higher. For me, Dax Hill was actually number 9 on our board. So to get him at 31, extremely happy with that. I think that's a tremendous pick. Maybe it doesn't fill an immediate need, because then it would probably kick the can down a little bit for defensive tackle and corner. So I wasn't surprised when they addressed those right away. I think round two was interesting because the corner runs started happening like right away. I started getting nervous around pick like 55. I'm like, whew, if they don't get Cam Taylor-Britt, I believe I tweeted it around this time, they're like, that's it for the second round corners. You're going to have to go into round 3 or 4 or else you're reaching. So they move up. They get the guy, they get the last guy that I think can be a starting outside corner. So I like that pick a lot. I like, you know, being aggressive, going up and getting your guy. And then Zach Carter, Taylor-Britt, I had 65th. They got him at 60. So they moved up and, you know,
right.
Carter, I had him at 90 overall on the board. They got him at 95. So I didn't think it was a reach.
Right.
To be honest with you, I think this defensive tackle class really dropped off in this range. I wasn't huge on Perrion Winfrey. That was the name I think that was batted around a lot by fans. He just didn't play the run at all. And then he never tested athletically. So he's kind of a mystery. His profile is a little incomplete. I had Carter right with the guys like Thomas Booker and Matthew Butler in that range. They'll go late third, mid fourth round. So if they want to go ahead of it and pick that guy with a late third round pick, I've got no problem with it.
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, obviously they had Dax Hill. My understanding is the Bengals on their board, they had him in the teens. You know, he was coming off the board top 20, you know, into the teen. And again, you know, let your board talk to you, right? I mean, he's there at 31. Now, you know, here's a guy that can play the versatility, play safety, can play slot corner. And he has had some experience on the outside and running a 4.38. You know, you got to figure he can run with people. I mean, both guys they draft, 4.38, their team speed has just taken a major influx. I mean, you got two guys that sub 4.4 now, and the people that that you have to deal with in the in not only in the National Football League, but how about the quarterbacks that can run around the AFC North now? You know, with Jackson and Watson, and they've got these two guys are additional spy candidates. They have more spies than the FBI and the CIA. Man, they get spies everywhere. Defensive line, linebacker, back end. They're going to change it up. Lou is going to be, his game plan is going to be CIA, FBI, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing about all three of these guys. Versatile. They all played multiple positions. There were some that had Cam Taylor-Britt as maybe a safety potential convert because how much zone they play, how much off zone they play at Nebraska. You know, he just looked very adept at reading what's in front of him, knowing how offenses are trying to attack him with combo routes and stuff. Really good at that. He probably would have made a good safety. Now he'll make a really good zone corner for the Bengals after taking Dax Hill. But you're right on Dax Hill. I think what he allows you to do at safety, and we'll see how he gets on the field, right? They played a lot of three safety last year. They brought Quentin Flowers in to cover tight ends. I think now you get an upgrade at that spot as well. I think the advantage is, like, say you want to play man coverage and the defense wants to or the offense wants to shift or put a guy in motion. And instead of following that guy, you can say, all right, Hilton, you stay on that side. Dax, you come down. You're going to cover that slot guy that's on the right side now. Yep. Looks like zone pre-snap, but you're playing man because you're not worried about one of your safeties going against the slot guy if Dax Hill can do that. And he looked like, man, I thought that was when he was at his best. When he's covering that slot guy, playing in the box, even though he's a smaller dude, really not, you know, that size limits him at times. But I think just with that athleticism and tenacity, broad shoulders, long arms, he is tough to get around, man, and get away from if you're a smaller wide receiver. So I really like that pick, and that's why he was really high on our board. Tested fantastically. Production scores at safety put him in the 99th percentile, which means, like, that's, like, all pro-level guys that in college, when they produce at that level, high upside pick.
And, you know, wise coach that that I really respected, defensive side of the football. His comment always was, you know what, when you have a guy that is a really, really good football player, get him as close as you can to the line of scrimmage, even if he's a safety. The closer you get him to the line of scrimmage, the more havoc he can raise, the more problems he causes guys mentally, you know, in the offensive line at the quarterback position. And that's – Dax Hill seems to be a guy, like, when he's at the slot, he blitz off that slot corner, you know, and that's obviously a weapon. And if they have Hilton and Hill, you know, say a team comes out with double slot, you got those two guys, either one can cover, either one can blitz. I mean, it is – Lou Anarumo is going to be like the mad scientist in the lab, you know, concocting and creating. It's going to be interesting to see. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and then Zachary Carter as well, because he played end and defensive tackle. And yep. Honestly, I thought they played him too much at end. I think his future is going to probably be a defensive tackle, but maybe like a Wallace Gilberry type, you know, where he kicks inside and nickel, can give you some edge stuff as you need. Maybe if you want to defend like the Titans or Ravens, they want to run, you don't mind having a little bit extra beef at my edge spot. That's where Zachary Carter comes in. And when you watch him, it's inconsistent. I think that's why you're a little bit people are over the all over the map with the grade there, because you watch a couple games, you're like, you know, I'm not seeing it. And then the next game, he is just consistently flashing for whatever reason. And you see that high-end athleticism, long arms, 33.5-inch arms, which inside, that's a big advantage. You'll see him, his go-to move, and he's got a few. That's what I think I like about him is he's got nice setup moves and counter moves. He loves to get that long arm from the edge, really jackknife guys up and you know, get them off their heels. But then he comes next time with like a ghost arm. He'll put it out there, pull it in, dip underneath that, you know, underneath his hands, and he just runs around the edge for a guy that's 280 something. Usually you don't see that type of agility to come around the edge like that. So I think he still needs development time. When I saw him at the Senior Bowl inside, they kicked him in much more there. I think that's where he struggled to turn his speed into power. It's going to take time. It's going to take more reps. I think Florida played him too much on the outside, even though he did do a lot inside. So I like to pick probably a little bit development. He's got a path to play early, but I do see the upside there.
Yeah. I mean, I like his first step quickness. I think he's disruptive. I think he can penetrate, invert the line of scrimmage. Ogunjobi, you know, that was his game. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying he's going to give you the Ogunjobi pass rush inside that he did. Ogunjobi had a special season for the Bengals in that regard. Mm-hmm. But this kid, I agree, that stab move he has and then a counter off the stab. It's, to me, I always hated the pass rusher that a guy that was he's got five moves and he's trying to use them all and he doesn't know which one is his best.
Right.
If a guy has one move and then he has a counter off that one move, you're cooked, man. It's like, oh, he's got two really, really – he's got a go-to and then he's got one that's not far behind and they're totally different. What am I going to do? You hate to get in guessing games like that, you know. And so that's – it's gonna be interesting. I agree with you. I think it wasn't shocking to me. The prior two off seasons, the Bengals spent hundreds of millions of dollars on defense, and they drafted offensively. And the reverse of it happened this year. They three offensive linemen and a tight end. So you stands to reason, attack the defense, and first three picks of the draft, they do it. No shock to me.
No, when we talked last time, we laid this out completely about how when you spend that money, you kind of need the cheap labor of draft picks to fill in behind it and fill in the rest of the need positions on that side of the ball. Really, the only guys they've drafted that are making big contributions on defense are Jesse Bates, Sam Hubbard, and the two linebackers, Pratt and Wilson. They needed to add more of those guys because you got to think in 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is, when they have to extend all of these offensive weapons they have. And I think that's the goal, right? You want to keep that core around Joe Burrow. You're going to have these young draft picks on the defensive side. You know, the Reeders and the Hendricksons and the Woosiers, they're not going to get a third contract more than likely. You know, that's when those guys, you know, if they do, it'll be much cheaper. So point is there is you get the young guys filling in on defense and you let the big money go to the offense in a few years down the road.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Burrow quarterbacks are making 40 to 50 million. You figure Joe's, you know, best case scenario, 40 million plus. And then, you know, you get wide receivers making 20 mil. You can't pay both your wide receivers 20 mil. I hope the next TV contract is a couple of billion dollars because our cap has to jump up big time to be able to afford everybody on a league-wide basis. Why don't we jump to some of our fans that have responded here to our live stream. We're going to start with Randy Byers. Did the Bengals go interior offensive line, tight end, or wide receiver with that fourth-round choice? And with that fourth-round pick, it's pick number 135 in the draft for the Cincinnati Bengals. What do you think?
Yeah, all that sounds right. You know, yeah. I don't know if Dave, if you're not as high on tight end, it seems like a lot of people are talking tight end. And I do think, and maybe some of that for me is the value you typically get in the third, fourth, fifth round of those guys, you know, draft an athletic guy that was a big part of their passing offense. And that's where you find the Travis Kelce's or the George Kittle's and guys like that. But I do think there's a lot of starting offensive linemen still available. I like Zach Tom out of Wake Forest. I like Darian Kennard out of Kentucky. I think Cade Mays, the center out of Tennessee. Also Donovan West, the center out of Arizona State. I do think there's some starting, you know, offensive linemen there. Whereas receivers, I see it more as backups to gadget guys, but I think they need that as well, and they need a return man. So I do think they're probably looking at all three of those. And it's hard to project 30 picks still to go. Tight end just went off the board to the Bucks. Cade Otton, who out of Washington, very similar Washington type tight end that you know has been going. We know the Drew Samples I forget the guy that went to the Seahawks the year before that. Good blockers with good hands, but not much athletically. So I wasn't too much interested in him. But yeah, I do think those are the positions of let's see where the next 30 picks go.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate them addressing, you know, any of those spots, particularly, you know, the tight end that just moved on to the New York Jets, CJ Uzama, came in as a fifth rounder. You know what I mean? So this is where in, you know, fourth, fifth round is where you can get yourself a weapon, a guy that can definitely play in the National Football League. There's no question. Josh Holland, what about guard? It's a need. Yeah, interior offensive line. The left guard position is the remaining question, I guess, and it's going to be a free for all in there. But let's not forget that last year they drafted offensive linemen in the second, fourth, and sixth round, and theoretically all three of them can be candidates for that left guard position. They could all be battling it out in terms of, you know, they tripled down in last year's draft with interior offensive linemen. And in my eye, DeAndre Smith was really starting to come on. He get hurt, but this dude's got some long arms and he's got some athleticism to him. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens at that left guard position. And of course, you know, Jackson Carmen's a candidate in that slot as well. But I would not have any issue if they draft somebody. I like Kentucky. I like him. I like him a lot. I think he's a factor. I know that Frank Pollock was down at Kentucky working out. Kentucky had more than one prospect in their offensive line. They had a pretty good group up front. And I wouldn't be disappointed if the Bengals picked one of those guys down there at UK for sure.
Yeah, and you know, the thing, you know, when you get into this point of the draft and you're seeing guys on the board, I think what teams really do here is they say, all right, I just drafted these three offensive linemen last year. They still have their grades, right, next to them for what they drafted last year. Are any of these guys a significant upgrade? Will we take this Daniel Faleli over, you know, Deontay Smith in the same draft? If you would, then go ahead and make that pick. If you wouldn't, and you see a bigger gap from your fourth, fifth receiver than you do it, than what's on the board presented today, I think that's how that can kind of flow a little bit. I don't think they feel they have to make an offensive line pick. I think they will if there's a guy still there that they have like a third round grade on. And that I do think there are a few guys that could potentially do that. But again, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if those few guys that I mentioned earlier go in the next 15 picks or so.
Falele, what a monster.
Oh, my
gosh. I mean, that gene pool, you should freeze that gene pool for scientific research, man. That guy is one monstrous man. All right, so Yash Gami, I hope I'm saying your name right. Awesome, he says. I'm hoping for Falele or Deitch as our fourth, and then Ariza or the other punter as our fifth round.
Right.
I think he's going to go in the fourth, this guy, man. I don't know. I think fourth round is where I think somebody's going to spend a fourth round on him. Is there a chance we get a special team wide receiver in this draft, given the sixth round pick is gone?
Yeah, potentially, I guess. Or they could still take a punter, right? And I think, you know, obviously we've talked about punt returner already. But the guy you mentioned there, Kellen Deitch, the Arizona State, he played tackle. He's going to kick in the guard, though, with his 32 and a quarter inch arms. Right. Tested like a 97 percentile athlete. Worst thing about him is he's going to be a 25-year-old rookie. We got a bunch of old guys in this draft with the way, you know, the COVID years went and extra eligibility years went. But, you know, that's the biggest knock on him. I do like him, and I do think he could kick inside and be a starting guard and maybe even be a backup swing tackle, because I do think the Bengals started 11 offensive linemen last year. They got to the depth. So, you know, let's if they want to ensure that depth at all, I'm all for it.
And really, the National Football League has turned into – if you don't have position versatility, man, you're in trouble. You know, all three of the selections that the Bengals have taken on the defensive side of the ball, they all three fit that position versatility scenario. And if you're an offensive lineman, you got to be able to play more than one position, you know, unless you're a dominant guy at that one position. And that is, in my mind, was a tiebreaker. You know, Linderbaum, strictly a center. That was a little bit of a tiebreaker for me in terms of overall value. That dude's a great player. There's no question about it. He's as good a finisher, you know, as I've seen. And coming out of Iowa, he is an extremely talented technician. There's no question about it. But I do think that position versatility is going to rule the day. And you have to almost – Anybody that you draft inside is going to be able to play both guards and center. Anybody you draft on the edge has to be able to play both tackles. And normally they can kick inside the guard in an emergency. It's harder for a guard to kick out, but it's easier for a tackle to kick in. That's for sure.
I was going to ask you about that, about the, you know, single position for Linderbaum, how much that affected, because I do, you see teams around the league now when they draft a center, they don't want to plug them in right away, or they want to put them at guard for a year. And if you can't really do that with Linderbaum, that, you know, really lower the value for a lot of teams.
Yeah. I think it's a tiebreaker. You know, and it's a small tiebreaker, but I think it probably is a little bit of a tiebreaker. Move on. What do we have next, Dave? Steven McCoy ran two mocks today. Dawson Denton, center, number 254, the last seventh rounder.
I think he's calling a shot here. So I don't have anything on Dawson Denton, so I'm going to take your word for it, Steven.
Dawson Denton. It's a good name. That's a, you know, you have the alliteration. You got the double D going there, you know.
That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, at that point, the other thing that the Bengals, honestly, have done a pretty good job of is the college free agents. They have unearthed, you know, they spend a lot of time on it. They take it seriously. I think they take it more seriously than some other organizations do.
Just looking at their visits, a lot of them are going to be seventh rounders or priority free agents. And that's, that really shows you that they want to, you know, those are extra draft picks.
No question. No question about it. And they've unearthed some gems that have made rosters for them over the years in that regard. Who do we have next? We have Yash back again, or Big Blocks with Drop Tops. I love this draft. Very general statement. He loves the draft. Yeah, I mean, defensively, I think, like Lou Anarumo said in early presser that he had before the draft started, you don't have to be a football Einstein to realize that we need some additional bodies on the back end, and they addressed that. And with Ogunjobi moving on, that was a hole. They're trying to address that, so you really can't argue with what they did in terms of people they selected based on need as well, or a little bit of a need.
That's right. And just to catch people up that are watching, last couple of picks here may be of interest to Bengals fans. The Cleveland Browns at 108 take Perrion Winfrey, defensive tackle of Oklahoma. I know a lot of people were very interested if the Bengals would take him at that spot where they took Zachary Carter. And then the Seahawks follow that up. 109 taking out of Cincinnati corner Kobe Bryant.
About that, how about let's talk UC for a second. Five picks in the top 100, six now in the top 109, and that ties the record. Six draft picks. Brian Kelly had six players drafted in 2009. Sauce Gardner broke the record. Greg Cook was the highest drafted Bearcat in 1969 when the Bengals took him at number five. Sauce goes at number four. How about Luke Fickell and the UC Bearcats getting it done?
They've got a machine there. You know, some of these guys were transfers, like Brian Cook, the safety, and he goes in the third round, or was it late second? Either way, he goes on day two. And then a guy like Sauce wasn't a super high recruit, and he develops himself into a guy that teams were scared to throw against. Like, Alabama's like, we're not even going that side. Here, you can cover this bum we've got. It's a 4-3 receiver. No respect to that guy. Disrespect to that guy. But they put all their good receivers on the other side and said, we're not messing with Sauce on that side of the field. So, yeah, that's a good sign that it's not just a 1 or 2 year thing. This is going to be a program that probably turns out guys for a while because they're developing them.
Yep. They're you know, recruiting them and developing them for sure. The only thing about when I watch Sauce, he's very handsy.
Mm-hmm.
He's long, but he's saying, and in the NFL, there are specific officiating crews, man. If you put a fingernail on a guy more than 5 yards down the field, man, you're getting hankied, you know?
Yeah.
And you got to keep the hands within the framework of the body. And after 5 yards, hands off. There's going to be a little bit of adjustment for him, I think, from a technique standpoint.
You know what he reminds me of is Nnamdi Asamoah. He played for the Raiders. And, you know, just because those long, leggy guys, but he's smooth with it. Very smooth, easy mirror type of corner. You're right, though. He does like to put his hands on and gain that little bit of advantage maybe he doesn't have. As a leggy guy, it's hard to, you know, sometimes change directions. So he wants to lean on him and get a little, you know, get a grasp. I think Cam Taylor-Britt's got that a little bit as well at the top of routes. He likes to just – he's physical. He wants to body guys and just, you know, he doesn't care if you want to run into him. He's going to take that hit. He's going to hold his ground. But you can get flagged for that at times.
No question. Klausa 7. If anyone is an Ohio State football fan, then you know all about Dax Hill. This guy has crazy range and is all over the field. We needed that backside speed.
You know, that guy's Klausa here. At least he's very neutral with it. There's a lot of Ohio State fans that whenever they see a Michigan pick, they get a little sick to their stomach.
No doubt. No doubt about it. You know, the other thing with both Dax Hill and Taylor-Britt, they're both they have the academics were important to them. They're both intelligent from that standpoint, but it translates to football IQ. Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. Sometimes guys have football IQ, but not book smarts. And these guys seem to have both, and that's the best of both worlds, no doubt.
When you can see a guy's versatile, you know that the coaches trust him. And that, you know, like if you see that they're just letting this guy, you see a little, I use this example for when I'm watching prospects, a middle linebacker, and they just want to blitz him up the middle every time, even run blitzing. It's like, yeah, that guy probably doesn't know what he's doing. Well, other than that, you know, they just want him, hey, just attack, be fast, be strong, you know, and create for other players. But when you can move guys around to multiple positions, someone gets hurt and you kick them to that spot. Yeah, that's a sign that the coaches trust. You know exactly what you're doing. You can probably make calls. There's a few plays you'll see with Dax Hill as he's covering it and it gets in the deep half. He's pointing to guys as the plays are going, you know, like, all right, I'm going to go take the deep route. You've got the crosser. So just pointing and guys are reading and reacting to what he's saying. It's like, yeah, that's what you want in a safety. And then with Taylor Britt, you see it consistently on tape. There's one play in particular that reminded me of Asante Samuel, who was so good in zone and so heady and would just almost bait you and like, okay, I'm going to sit on this underneath route while you're going to try and hit the seam or this corner route behind me. And he was just too quick and too agile and he'll just turn his hips, boom, and be in that passing lane. You see that with Taylor Britt a whole bunch. He just understands how the offense is attacking him.
When you watch Dax Hill, safety, slot corner, he has played a little bit on the outside. With that 4.38 speed, do you think his hips are smooth and fluid enough? Can he flip his hips well enough to play significant snaps outside?
I wouldn't say significant, to be honest with you. When I do see like the upside, because what do I look for in a guy that can play the boundary? I do want the long speed and I want the ball skills. Are you comfortable turning your back in coverage, turning, locating, tracking the ball, making a play on it? It's different when you're inside of the hashes, right? You're more facing the quarterback. You can see it a little bit more. He's very good in there. There are a few. You see some wheel routes and stuff. He covers really well down the sideline, back to the ball. So maybe he could do it, but I think he even alluded to it when his press conference yesterday about, like, you know, he really wasn't asked to play that position specifically. So he's open to it, but just really hasn't been coached to do that enough. You're right about the hips. There's a few where you see he's got to – what do you got to do on the boundary also? You got to protect that deep stuff, especially if you're the only guy over there. You open your hips, turn and run. You got to be able to throttle down, get it together, snap, and get back to the receiver. I think he's a little bit clunky there, mm-hmm. as a safety would be. He's an athletic safety, but he is still a safety.
Right, right. All right, we got DeRocky. Need to get a receiver, tight end type for Joe Burrow. Hard to argue. I mean, you know – the fourth receiver is an important scenario. There's no question about it. I think the Bengals trio, their top three receiver package is as good as the league can put out there.
Yeah.
Boy, if you come up with something else to add to the equation, man, that's going to be scary. Whether it be a tight end that has the versatility to flex and become a big receiver like a lot of these tight ends are, or, you know, a receiver in general that can just line up in the slot and get things done.
So, and we saw when T. Higgins went down last year, that had an effect for that mid portion, yeah. you know, games like 4-6 or whatever that was, that had an effect a little bit. Teams really started shifting towards Ja'Marr Chase. And Higgins also hurt his hamstring really bad week 17 of his rookie year. That would have knocked him out if the Bengals were playing in contention for even further. So he's had a couple of injuries. He's got the shoulder thing now. He won't be ready until, you know, late in the summer. I do think they could value receiver really well. Last few picks, though, Dave, if you're interested, a couple guys we talked about, or at least one, Daniel Falele, the Ravens, yeah. 110. And then a guy I really liked was Daniel Bellinger, goes to the Giants at 112. I think Bellinger would have been when I went through my process and I go through the Bengals' history and everything they draft and what it normally looks like, the guy that spit out a couple years ago was Drew Sample at tight end. This year it's that Daniel Bellinger. And I'm like, okay, that's the fourth, fifth round pick if he's still there. And he's off the table.
Oh, Falele, he fits Baltimore's dynamic. Baltimore drafts gargantuan bodies in the offensive line and defensive line. I mean, their interior defensive linemen are enormous on a year-to-year basis. And, you know, whether it be Orlando Brown or whoever, I mean, their offensive line is beastly as well. They just they get after it in terms of that's their prototypical guy. If he's big, he's a Raven.
That's why it's interesting they took Linderbaum, right? Because now you see, like, they still like the big guys. After you take a Filele, who honestly people were comparing to Orlando Brown, those are big guys that aren't going to test well. I mean, those guys aren't going to move well. They're giants. So he's still there in the fourth round. And then you kind of wonder, okay, so they still like those big guys. How does Linderbaum fit? They just must not. At that point, they don't care. He's not the prototypical, but we think he's good enough on tape. He makes us probably a little bit different. It gives them a little bit more in their inside zone stuff, duo stuff inside. I think, you know, they'll see the value. But, right, it's kind of an odd mix.
Yeah, and watching him, you make a great point there, Joe. His lateral movement. I mean, I've never seen a guy as reach a three technique,
shoulder
the guard as fluidly and easily as this guy does down the line of scrimmage. It is amazing to watch him overtake a three technique. I'm like, am I seeing things right? Man, this guy, unbelievable how he can, he's got lateral jets in his feet or something.
It's like he bounces out there right with the snap. Yeah. That first step is poof, and he's out two yards to the side, already getting hands on that three tech. Shifting him and passing him off to his guard on the other side, you know, and then he gets to the second level and takes out that guy. Yeah, it was fun to watch Linderbaum. It's well, now we got to watch him on the other side. We got to watch DJ Reader bench press him a few times.
That's right. That's right. But I can speak to that, how tough that is, having had to play the center position. Blair Bush goes down, you know, with a significant injury, and I have to play the last six games of season at center. I'd never played center. High school, college, or in the NFL, I practiced a little bit in the NFL for emergency situation like that. And my biggest fear, thing I knew I needed to do first and foremost, make sure you get the exchange done.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you are snapping the football and you're taking that lateral step down line of scrimmage, you're shrinking that space for the exchange big time. And for him to have so much confidence in his ability and the quarterback's ability for him to get it up there, quarterback to get it out of there quick enough, where he's going to shrink that space and get down the line like a jet. I'm telling you, man, there's a lot of talent involved in that. People don't even think about.
And experience. I mean, he started as a freshman. He was like 278 pounds. And, you know, that's where when people ask me, why aren't you worried about the size or the strength? I'm like, put on his freshman tape. He was decent then, and he's given up 30 to 40 pounds on everyone he's facing. You know, look. They don't have to be a monster. They'd be a 300-pound defensive tackle, and he's given up a lot of size then, and he held his own. So I think he'll adjust, and he'll figure it out. But you're right. On that snap exchange, that shows he is, like, he's a born center, man. Like, it takes a little bit of guts to be able to do it as quickly and fast and efficiently as he does.
Yeah, and the thing about him, you know, he was a very accomplished wrestler. So he loves it in the phone booth. He loves that close quarter stuff where he knows, like, from his wrestling background, I'm going to keep myself balanced. I know how to get him off balance.
Yeah.
And you don't need to have 35-inch arms to do that. And he feels comfortable in that environment. And his feet allow him to get an advantage in that environment because his feet are so good. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's working his leverage. He's getting you off balance. Yeah, I'm not saying this guy's not this guy is a football player. There's no two ways about it.
And that's the underrated part about strength. We just think of, you know, look at the bench and the weight, and that's like the cursory way. A lot of people are like, oh, he doesn't have the power. His hands are super strong, and his core is really strong. Yeah. You see, and he's got a guy like this, and he can flip his hips and really get in there and get that leverage and that advantage on him. That's where the strength comes from with him.
The one thing about Zach Carter that I was impressed with watching him, his hands are a blur.
Yes,
he's got some hands in any athletic endeavor. Starts with your feet, ends with your hands. You know, whether it's hitting a baseball, throwing a baseball, shooting a basketball, catching a football, whatever it is, you got to get in position with your feet, and you have to finish whatever that athletic requirement is with your hands, man. And Zach Carter, the dude has some hands.
And that's why I said that he's got about four or five moves that he feels, or at least he looks comfortable, because he's quick with them and deliberate with those moves. And then when someone asked me on Twitter, why not Perrion Winfrey? Perrion Winfrey had no pass rush plan.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to have an idea of what you want to do, how you want to set it up. Starts with your feet, your get off. Can you get the guy off balance? Can you get the odd step where you can come back inside on him? Or Zachary Carter looks like he understands that stuff. Perrion Winfrey is more of just, I'm an athlete and I'm going to try and do what I can do out here. And I think you're going to get more success with the guy who's a master of his craft.
And Winfrey, thing about him, his length, you know, it's almost like trying to block an octopus. You know, you're blocking a condor. It's like you can't get into his body. Once if he gets his hands on you and locks him out, man, it's like you got to get those hands and arms off you. So you're never going to get to his body and block him.
And to be fair, Oklahoma, they keep slanting their guys one way or the other. It's like so hard to, you know, get a feel for what he actually can do.
True. Good point. All right. I hope I'm saying this right. Nikopiko, with a deep edge class, could you see the Bengals going edge in the fourth round? I think there's some edge guys in the fourth round.
Yeah, I do too. I'm pulling up my sheet right now. The guy I thought that they could have had interest in the last round was Kingsley Anagbare, who is a guy who could kick inside. There's still a lot of edge guys left here. It's a very, very deep class. I think Jeffrey Gunter out of Coastal Carolina and Isaiah Thomas out of Oklahoma, another Oklahoma guy, played on the other side of Nick Benito, who was a end of the second round pick, day two pick. Let's just go with that because my mind's a little bit fuzzy. But point is, there are a few guys here that I think could be there. It starts to thin off a little bit now as we're getting to this point. The edge class, we knew it was strong. We knew it was very athletic. Teams really went hard. You know, the thing we didn't get to talk about, I guess, is why maybe some of the picks didn't feel as much as value. I think this goes to it. No quarterbacks went. Like, you want, if we can get five quarterbacks to go in the first round, like a normal year, you can push five more guys to the Bengals pick. Same happened in round two. I'm like, okay, here's now we'll get four guys to go off the board here. When they didn't go off the board, that's why the Bengals have to move up five spots to get that corner.
Two quarterbacks and 74 picks. That's crazy. It really is. It's unbelievable. All right, Stephen McCoy, would you take Beavers if they're at 174?
Yeah, sure. I don't know that I'm high on taking a linebacker in any spot, so it's going to have to be a guy that's, you know, provides a little bit of depth and does some special teams work early in his career, because I think they've drafted – it's kind of funny. We've talked about how they draft three offensive linemen. They drafted three edge rushers last year. They drafted three linebackers in 2020, and then they haven't touched the position because they're kind of – they like those guys. You understand, when they draft these players, they have high grades on them. They think they can develop and be, you know, if not just role players, core players on that defense. And so far, I think they've been right on that. So I don't think they'll touch linebacker unless it's just extreme value. They still got a guy high on the board, or they just want to round out that last, you know, special teams unit.
You know, I think that's a great point. When we talk about what are they going to do edge rush in the fourth round, I don't think they feel pressure. I mean, if the board dictates it, fine. But let's you brought it up, Joe. You know, we talked about it too. Let Asai, man. A lot of people thought he was a second round guy. The Bengals got him in the third out of Texas. This kid, I think, has some traits, and I think he's going to be, you know, a talent. He's an edge rush guy that they draft last year. He gets hurt in the first preseason game against Tampa Bay, and he's done. Hubert in the seventh round out of Kansas State, you know, smaller guy and, you know, a blue collar, hard work, you know, effortless, total effort, empty the effort bucket every snap, but a guy that you want to take a look at. So those are two guys that you're saying, all right, well, we drafted him last year, but we didn't really get a chance to even evaluate him. Add that to this year's draft, because hopefully they'll be healthy and they'll be in the mix as well. And now you've got, you know, two more defensive people on top of the first three draft picks that you have five defensive players and four of them drafted in the first three rounds over a 2-year time frame.
True. Yeah. And Cam Sample is very similar to Zachary Carter, I think, and guys that are going to kick inside, guys with natural power in their hands. You know, I think, that makes you more multiple, allows you to do a lot of different things now up front.
Yep. All right. CR Given 88. Who's your favorite tight end that is left? I've seen Cole Turner compared to Tyler Eifert. Is that fair comparison?
Yeah, he's not completely wrong. If you were to – no one's Eifert in this class, because Eifert had the blend of speed with the basketball above the rim type ability, ball skills that were just, you know, unmatched. But if
injuries
you said –
Injuries killed him. That guy had – he had – Pro Bowl,
yes.
Pro Bowl written all over him, man.
Yeah, completely. He would have a long, very good career. But if you were to say which tight end in this class of all of them, even the guys that were drafted, who had the best above the rim type ball skills the way Eifert did, it's Cole Turner out of Nevada. And he's big, he's long, he's just consistently, you put on the tape of him, he's just boxing guys out, just playing above the rim. Every single catch is almost like that. That's a red zone weapon. Bengals struggled in the red zone. If they wanted to make that pick and use a guy like that, I think that would work completely. My favorite remaining is Charlie Kohler out of Iowa State. And he reminds me of like a poor man's Jason Witten. because there's nothing after the catch with this guy, but he is a good athlete. And you see it in his route running. You see the way he throttles down, the way he stays vertical, doesn't give anything away in his routes, running Y option routes all the time off the line of scrimmage. And he's just shaking guys off the top of the route, being a friendly target for your quarterback over the middle. I think he can do that. Now, I want a guy that can do a little bit more after the catch at tight end. I think it's one of those positions that's turned into that, where you can get the advantage not only in coverage, but then afterwards. You get a big guy rumbling down the field, running a 4.6. He's hard to tackle. Kohler's not going to give you that, but he's got the lowest drop rate of all tight ends in this class. So he's got tremendous hands. He's a very good route runner in an offense that passed the ball a ton. He had a lot of production.
You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier today. Did a podcast with Coach Livingston, and he's friends with Bob Trumpy, and obviously Trump's a good buddy of mine, former teammate. And Trump has said this to everybody over the years. You know, he's a lot of years too early. Bob Trumpy was a heck of a basketball player, and then played football obviously as well. Coat hanger shoulders, could really run. Trump ran solid 4.6. Might have even been a touch below on a real good day. His size speed ratio was unbelievable. And Paul Brown utilized him some. We ran the triple pass, double reverse, pitch back to the quarterback, and Trumpy had burned people down the field. But if Trumpy were playing in today's NFL, oh my gosh, he would be a matchup nightmare still, and Trump would put up some stupid numbers. It'd be crazy.
You know, the underrated thing, I think when we look at tight ends, we want big, strong guys. We want them to block. All that's great. But tight end ones, like your starting number one guy that you can have in a passing offense, needs to be an athlete, needs to be a fast guy. If you're not running a 4.75 or faster, people will bring up like Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina, runs a 4.83 at his pro day. It's unlikely that guy's going to develop into, no pun intended, going to turn it into a tight end type one. There are a couple guys left that are really fast in this class. I brought up Charlie Kohler. He ran 4.67, so he passes the threshold there of what you typically want. Cole Turner is a 4.76, so he's right on the bottom of what you'd like there. And then the guy that's probably a even later pick is Grant Calcaterra out of SMU. I think the Bengals had contact with him. I've got him highlighted here. So, maybe those are the three guys to start to eye on a little bit here.
Interesting. All right, Steven Turner. Curtis Brooks in the fifth round would be cool from UC. What do you think about Curtis Brooks in the fifth? Is that a little rich, or do you see it?
Curtis Brooks is the funnest prospect I watched all year long, and yeah. It's probably because it shocked me. He wasn't on boards. I'm talking 3 weeks ago when I watched him, and I finally got to him because people were like, don't forget this guy. He tested really well. He was super productive at UC. I'm like, all right, I'll get to him. It's Bengals fans, so I thought they were just, stumping for their own guy here. But then I put it on, and I'm like, okay, he's 285, playing nose tackle on a three-man front, surrounded by a bunch of draft picks, right, guys that are going to – and he's flashing consistently. He probably disengages – as well as any defensive tackle in this class. The high-end athleticism shows up. They just want him to hold the guy up, almost two-gap. Okay, it's a pass. Go ahead and make a move and do it. And he does consistently, beating Notre Dame's offensive, well-coached offensive line. He had good games against Georgia the year before and Alabama. Those are big-boy offensive linemen. And I think he had the first two tackles in the Alabama game, and then they treated him differently after that. And so, like, when I watched him, I'm like, it kind of looks like Grady Jarrett to me, who was a fifth-round pick out of Clemson. And I think teams struggle sometimes when a guy plays nose tackle at 280, 285, or plays some five tech, and they're like, yeah, he's not really going to do that in the NFL. He's going to be a three tech. We didn't get to see enough tape of him doing this. Say Curtis Brooks only had about 200 snaps. He's like a penetrating B-gap type guy. So you don't get a lot of footage of him doing what he's going to do in the NFL. But I think if you can project it, if you can look at that tape, you can say he can do this in the NFL at some level. I think the numbers all come out like he could potentially be a starting free tech in the league. But when a guy doesn't get invited to the combine, and I know like Fickell was really upset about that, like he couldn't believe it. And when he tested at the pro day, it's like, yeah, he should have been invited. This guy was a 95th percentile athlete. When you don't get invited, though, it typically says you're not getting drafted, or if it is, it's the maybe fifth, sixth, seventh round, more than likely. So if he does get picked, it's probably pretty late.
Yeah, we did a podcast with Luke Fickell talking about all of his prospects, eight potential guys to get drafted or more. And his comment about Brooks was, geez, literally, this guy, unsung hero MVP type guy, you know, I mean, the things that he did, the blue collar dirty work, you know, and he couldn't say enough good things about Brooks. And that seems to be universal. I mean, teammates, coaches, everybody just loves the kid. That says a lot too. Hoskins, are we BPA or strictly a certain position like offensive line? Are we best player available or strictly a certain position?
You know, you want to take it. I was going to say, I think they went BPA round one and then made sure they got their needs addressed in two and three, which was close to the value on the board. Right. I think they're probably in the range of both where, yeah, let's see how the board falls to us. We got a few positions we want to find.
I think it's interesting that this is always a debate. To me, when teams are setting their boards, there is need in terms of
baked in.
Yeah, need's always a factor. It's like, all right, well, you know, I've got these guys pretty equal in value, but boy, we need this guy more. So let's put him a little bit higher up the board. You know, I think it's just human nature. It's just natural. And that's the thing, you know, say like we're talking about a nose guard, potentially for the Bengals, you have Tupou as a backup to DJ Reader. Is that something that you do, particularly after drafting, you know, three players in the first, and Tyler Shelvin as well. And three defensive players in the first three rounds this year. I don't know, that comes into the mix as well. You know, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they spread the wealth a little bit. You got to think that they're going to go at some point, offensive line, tight end, wide receiver. I mean, they're going to have to feed the offense a little bit.
Yeah. So like for an example, first round, I've got when I Bengals are on the clock, I take a snapshot of the top three guys that were on the board. It was Arnold Ebukadi, the edge rusher from Penn State. Then it went Dax Hill, and then it went Lewis Cine, who went the next pick after the Bengals. If those were not ranked with position versatility or a position or need in mind, they just were how the score spit them out. If I were to put it in terms of positional value, and if I would have factored in age and maybe even where I see them potentially needing more of a guy, with both safeties being under contract for one more year and the three picks at edge, I probably also would have slid Dax Hill above Arnold Ebukadi. And so like for me, again, that's how you end up baking that into your draft board. I don't do that because I don't have a team, you know what I mean? But if you were Duke Tobin, that is already baked in there and you already have that guy above.
And boy, like your point about no quarterbacks taken, to me, I was still – There were players available down the stretch. Wyatt from Georgia was there. Karloftis got taken right before the Bengals selected. I mean, I'm thinking Wyatt is still there in the mid 20s, late 20s. What is going on? It's because, you know, if quarterbacks were taken, it would have been a different dynamic. I don't know. It was a weird draft. All right, sucks. Would you be upset if the Bengals decided to select Curtis Brooks with their next pick?
We started the Curtis Brooks train. Now it's left the station. No bringing it home. Would I be excited? Yeah, sure. Oh, would I be upset? No, I wouldn't be upset because I think he's a good player. But having already addressed D-tackle, I do think they could use another three-tech type. I know, you know, after getting Carter, I still feel like there is some room for depth there. You know, I don't think they'll spend another pick on it, but the only thing I would knock it for is I don't think he's going to go in the fourth round, but it is the end of the fourth pick.
Right, right. And that's the thing. They're so late this year, late one, equivalent to, you know, talent valuation. It's early five or whatever. There's not that big of a differential or a drop. Les Hernandez. Hello, Lappin Joe. What are the best Bengals tight ends available? Who do you guys think the Bengals may have their eyes on? We did talk that through a little bit.
We did. Last few picks, though, if you're interested, for anyone's watching the stream here, a couple guys we may, if the Bengals want to double dip at corner, I think they could, even though they drafted a safety that could double there. Damari Mathis out of Pittsburgh went to Denver at 115. And an edge rusher I meant to mention when you asked the question, Michael Clemens out of Texas A&M went to the Jets at 117. I would have been interested in him.
All right, let's see. We got John Harden. They should have traded up with the Patriots to get Karloftis. The Pats were begging to trade back.
Cole Strange, right? That's what they took.
Strange. How about that? How about McVay? I think McVay may have had an adult beverage or two. It seemed like he was really loose up there on that stage, and he was loose-lipped and loose-tongued too, boy.
Well, they weren't picking for anytime soon, so if they wanted a few, that's okay. But they reacted exactly how I reacted, to be honest with you. So it was the Patriots. They do what they want, man. I've heard stories. They've gone in the draft with about 50 guys on their board. That's it. So they're not conducting it the way they've identified the guys they want already, and they're going to go get them. But I do see what John Harden, is saying there. You could have given him a sixth rounder and moved up two spots had you have really, really wanted to jump the Chiefs, which I think the Chiefs did a great job maneuvering the draft there, getting Trent McDuffie and then getting Karlaftis. I do wonder if Karlaftis would have been there, if it's Dax Hill or Karlaftis, because I was really high on him as well.
All right, rank these three if they're still available. Kingsley Ngabari, is that how you say it?
Yep.
Charlie Kolar, Marquise Hayes.
This is from the Locked On Bengals. I used to host that podcast, so they're testing me here a little bit. And knowing I like Ngabari and Kolar in this range, both grade very well for your fourth-round pick, you'd get high marks from me. But after already drafting a guy that's going to kick inside with Carter, I'm going to put Kolar a little bit ahead of that. I'm going to put Hayes next. I have a lot of O-line guys that I trust really love him as a potential starting guard. And then I'd put Ngabari after, and that probably goes against my board. But just, you know, like I said, we got to kind of build the board with need in mind.
Okay, let me ask you this. If the punter from San Diego is still on the board at the end of the fourth round, do you think the Bengals consider taking him?
What pick are we at? Because his over-under was 117. So we're at pick 120, and he hasn't been taken. So if you put the bet on there for the, you know, after 117, you win a little bit on that. But I don't know. You know, he didn't hold in college because he was the kicker also.
Right.
So I wonder how much Darren Simmons values that. He's been working on it. He actually posted videos because people were talking about this. And he's like, you know, I can hold. Look at it. I've been training. Plus, the guy's an athlete, and it seems like he can do anything, so I don't want to put it past him. I wouldn't hate the pick. You know what I think? Punting is kind of going wayside. Teams are going for it more on fourth down. But when you do need a punter, what do you want? I want a guy that can boom it because you're punting from the 20 because you're not going for it, you know, at 40 and into your own end zone. I want a guy that's going to launch it, flip the field. You're talking about one of the strongest kicking legs for McPherson in the league. You'd have one of the strongest punting legs in the league. That might be worth 3 points a game, and that might decide a few.
You know, you're right. I mean, you know, pooch punting and that sort of thing is almost like lost art now. Nobody's, you know, doing that sort of thing, trying to pin people back inside the 10. But this guy can pin you back inside your own 10 when he's punting from his own 10. It's crazy. I mean, flipping the field position like that. What do you think of Chrisman as a punter for the Bengals?
He looks like he can be an NFL punter, you know, and maybe that's not anything special when compared to a Matt Araiza right away, who looks completely, you know, incredible.
Yeah.
They're calling him punt God. And I understand why when you see an 85 yard punt go off his leg, but Chrisman, if they feel that he's the guy that's going to take over for Huber, that's fine. I get it.
The one thing you mentioned though, Kevin Huber may have been, or it still is, Kevin Huber is as good a holder as I've ever seen. I've never seen the guy, even in practice, I've never seen him bobble it, even in terrible weather, torrential downpour in practice, boom, machine.
Yeah.
Kevin Huber is an outstanding, and boy, you just take it for granted until one's messed up, you know?
But he
never messes it up, never.
And think about coming into that huddle, you're a 21-year-old Evan McPherson, and you're gonna hit this 53-yarder in multiple playoff games, right? So pick which one you like as your favorite. But he gets in there, and who's the guy that says, you know, you ready to go? It's a veteran of Kevin Huber, Clark Harris, who's been – both guys been in the league forever. They were on the team. I remember a preseason game. I'm in Buffalo because that's where I live. And there's Terrell Owens and Chad Johnson's on the field because I'm going through my pictures recently. And there's Clark Harris and Kevin Huber on the sideline still on that roster. That's how long ago they've been on this roster. That's going to help a 21-year-old rookie calm his nerves, know they're going to do their job to the utmost perfection. You just got to do yours. You're not worried about anything else. We love the way McPherson played as a rookie. Some of that credit goes to Kevin Huber.
No question. And Clark Harris, like you said,
yes.
that battery, I mean, you know, when you're a rookie kicker, the last thing in the world you need to have on your mind is that going to be a shaky snap? He doesn't even think. He never even considered a problem with the snap and the hold. And when you can eliminate that from your mind as a rookie kicker, oh, my gosh, that's priceless. It's priceless. It really is.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. M. Kendon Hall, 68. There are a couple of analysts talking about a running back at 31. Could you see us taking one this draft?
Sure. You know, I think when you get Chris Evans late last year, they're really happy with that pick. You know, I think he can develop into a number two guy. But teams do see value in running backs on day three, and I get it. So, yeah, it could happen, but I don't foresee it.
Whatever analyst was saying, a running back at 31, that was a bad call.
I think he means 31 in the fourth round, right? Not 31 overall.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes more sense. All right. Yash got me again. I agree that. Oh no, where are we? Is that where we're going, Dave? Yash, or where are you going here?
Anywhere you want. I want to shout out to Yash because
he's in England. Yash is in England. He's in London. Well, I'll tell you a lot. Yash got me. London, England. He's a very, very excited participant today. That's some good comments here. He says I agree that having a seasoned vet who is a true professional is invaluable for rookie development. But is it time Huber passes the torch on? I mean, he's on the back nine. There's no question about it. It's, you know, if it's not this year, nobody can do it forever. That's for sure. He's had a brilliant career. No question about it. Local kid. I mean, high school, college, National Football League, all in the city of Cincinnati. That's rare. And performed at a high level. At all three levels, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it just seems like a great guy. You would know, though. He's
the best. He is. Always, Jerry, do you think we should have traded Bates? I'm afraid we'll eventually let him walk for nothing. Time will tell on that, but, he's all I can say is he's here for this season, and in my opinion, the safety triplets – now that you add Hill to the equation, I'm not sure that many teams in the NFL can boast a trio better than those three guys. And how about the speed that group has now? When you factor in Dax Hill at a 4.38, that's nuts at the safety position. I mean, back in the day, I'm talking 70s and 80s when I played, it was safeties were like, you know, they just weren't big enough to play linebacker, but they had more linebacker traits than they had secondary traits. They try to take your head off, and there are different body types and everything. Now, boy, if you can't run, you can't play anywhere on this field in today's NFL.
No, you're chasing Jamar Chase and Lamar Jackson, and you need to be fast to catch those guys. I'm with you, though. Anytime you bring in an extra guy like that and you create that competition, you create that fire in that room a little bit of you're playing for your job. Not only are they in contract years, the two veterans, but now you've got a first round pick there. And people are directly correlating this to Jesse Bates, but Von Bell also is going to be a free agent. There's a scenario where Bates plays great, except takes whatever offers on the table. And you were going out there with Dax Hill and Jesse Bates, who would give you two tremendously rangy athletic dudes on the back half there. And we like Von Bell, but the idea that it's, you know, when you look at the breakdown of Dax Hill, 300 snaps at strong safety, 300 snaps at free safety, 900 snaps in the slot, the strong safety, we think of those as the big thumping guys, but the league has changed. Those strong safeties are actually the man cover guys now. They're the ones that are going to come down and take the tight end or take the slot guy if they're, you know, depending on how the formation lines up. So you need that strong safety to be able to do that. I think Dax Hill potentially is a better strong safety, or at least early in his career, doing what he did at Michigan, being in the box, being, you know, in closer to the line of scrimmage. So I don't think it directly means Bates. It could mean either or.
Yeah, I agree. They're both on their contract year for different reasons, obviously. But, you know, when you look at it, the wide receiver position, going off the charts. I mean, getting big bucks. Corner, big bucks. Safety, whoop, plateaued, on the way down. People aren't that position looks like it's peaked from an economic standpoint, from a value standpoint. It makes you wonder when the Bengals made a significant offer 2 years ago, you could be living off of that offer for 2 years in, say, at $12 million a year, as opposed to now. Like, what is it? What's the ultimate? What's the final deal going to be? If it's not with Cincinnati, what's it going to be with anybody else? Man, I don't know. Did you miss that window? Did you miss that peak in valley? Or are you going into a valley in terms of value at the safety position? It's going to be interesting. What's the biggest need left in y'all's opinions? That's from Timothy Stanell. Biggest need.
Depends on how you want to look at it, because needs is a blanket term. Is this someone you need to develop for the next few years to replace, you know, a field guy that you're not going to be able to retain? Is it somebody that can play immediate snaps right now? I think that maybe the path there is that left guard. If the guy is good enough to beat out the competition that's there, then you could, that could be a guy who plays 1,000 snaps as a rookie if he's the right guy. So like tight end, in my opinion, is someone you want to develop for 2 years down the line, because it takes that long, you know. And so the other one's probably immediate need is that wide receiver punt returner. So it's tough to say which one is which. If it's the right guy, they could play a lot of minutes. If it's a developmental pick, you could probably spread that around to different positions.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I like Jones so much, kid from Houston, the corner, 5'8". Mm-hmm. I mean, that was obviously a knock, but 9 returns, touchdowns, 6
electric
returns, 3 punt returns. I mean, man, that's significant value there, and he has really good technique, you know, to offset guys like Linderbaum that's had short arms. He's had them his whole life. I mean, he's had to adjust. You know, Jones has been shorter his whole life. You know, he's had to adjust. And these guys that are playing at this level or getting ready to play at this level, they've made hellacious adjustments. And, you know, when UC played Houston, yeah, did Pierce go over the top of Jones for jump balls? He did, but Jones deflected some too. I mean, Pierce won his share. That's obviously the biggest concern with a guy like Jones, but I really liked him because of that value that he provided as a returner. And I know that's something that Darren Simmons is looking at, you know, very, very heavily now in terms of punt return. There's no question.
Yeah, look for Kyle Phillips, wide receiver UCLA, Bo Melton, wide receiver Rutgers. They're still on the board now. I just clicked to see, you know, the last few picks, handful of picks here. Only one really worth mention, 2 more corners if they want to double dip. Jalen Armour Davis, corner out of Alabama. And then Jack Jones, who the Bengals brought in for a visit out of Arizona State. I thought he'd be there a little bit later. His everything looks good there. I think he's got some character flags that we're going to drop him down. Didn't seem to affect him. Patriots take him. They're doing what they want to do. And then if people asked about linebacker, the best one left on my board was Brandon Smith out of Penn State. Goes to the Panthers at 120.
Sweet. All right, final question from Donzel Shows. And we appreciate everybody's participation. You guys are awesome. Thanks for tuning in to our stream. Do we need to replace Tyler Boyd right now, guys?
No. I think the last play is sticking in people's minds a little too hard. Maybe the last 2 plays for him, actually. I think he ran the wrong route on the 1 sack at the, you know, third quarter end or fourth, whatever that was. But he's obviously provided a lot more good plays than bad over his career. Still a good player. It may be his last contract with the Bengals, and that's fine because they've drafted and replaced and upgraded at outside receiver. When I mention a slot guy, it's just because I think you could develop that guy for when Boyd leaves or add a little bit of more juice, immediate, you know, speed or agility to that spot. But I think Boyd is the slot receiver for the remainder of his contract.
I agree. And I think Joe Burrow would agree with that too. He's got a chemistry with Tyler Boyd that's pretty special. What's up, Dave?
We have to do this because every stream we have,
Thaddeus Moss. Okay, this was from Sleazy M. What are we going to do with Thaddeus Moss? We haven't done anything at tight end. We haven't done anything to this point in time with Thaddeus Moss. Is he an option at the tight end position? Joe Burrow likes throwing to Thaddeus Moss. There's no question about it. That's a big plus for Thaddeus Moss to have Joe Burrow in his corner. There's no question.
He needs to stay healthy, to be honest with you. It's why he didn't get drafted. It's why he didn't work with the Washington Commanders. It's why even he was going to be active for a game. I think he hurt himself in warmups. Was that it?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. So,
right.
You know, it's kind of cruel sometimes the way it works out. So he's got to stay healthy and show that he can be Burrow's best friend.
Well, Joe Goodberry, you're not only a Goodberry, you're a good man.
Thank you.
I certainly do appreciate you carving the time that you did with us, and great information. Nobody studies it any harder and any more intelligently than you do. There's no question. And can't thank you enough. Appreciate it. Well,
thank you for having me. It was a good time.
What was that, Dave? Oh yeah. I did want to say this. My older brother, Bruce, birthday was April 28th. So on this live stream, I want to wish my older brother, he's 14 months older than me. He's 71 years old this year. I got a big one. I got 70 coming up in June. That's crazy. I'm glad I made it though. And Bruce, happy birthday to you, my man, my older brother. Love you, man. 71 years young. Happy birthday to Bruce Lapham. And with that said, Joe, enjoy the rest of the draft.
Yeah, we'll do.
And I'm very interested, as always, college free agent battle, man. That's when, you know, that's when the rubber meets the road. Those quick phone calls, those bonuses that are offered. You don't want to get drafted late in the seventh round. You want to be a college free agent. You're going to make a hell of a lot more bonus money than getting drafted and being controlled by one football team that has no money left to spend because of a salary cap.
You know what? Also, too, that's when you start getting some texts and DMs on social media from agents. Hey, what's the Bengals depth chart look like at wide receiver? Should my guy go there?
Yeah.
Yes, I do think your undrafted wide receiver's got a great chance to make a Bengals roster if they don't draft a guy in the next couple picks here. That's one spot for sure.
Thanks again. Have the best weekend you ever had.
Thank you. That would be great. Thanks, Dave.
All right, Joe.
At First Star Logistics, we're a very strict company that really puts the pressure on our employees. Brakes? What are those?
That's what I'm talking about, Icky. Get the body right, then the mind's right. You know? Yeah.
Gotta get that body right.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Become a star with a chance to earn the highest commission percentages in the industry as a freight broker agent. Check out firststarlogistics.com.